mai, haere mai, ki tēnei hōtaka. Welcome to the panel on RNZ National. Or getting kids to school on the bus, taking the bus to uni, prices will double tomorrow. Hundreds of thousands affected. Should they stay or go? That in just a minute. Also, coalition support has slumped in the latest politics poll. Why, we ask? And MPs to receive their first pay rise in 6 years, a backdated 2.8%, 2.9% increase as well from July the 1st this year. The Prime Minister, 50k extra. Do you support an MP pay rise? Be interested in your views. Also on the panel today, the Auckland to Hamilton train connection. Have you done it? Could be last chance saloon. We've discussed that. And we got talking yesterday after our cell phone ban in school discussion. What students did in their lunch break before cell phones. So our question of the day today is, what did you do? I'll kick off. Nelson College just absolutely addicted to handball. And in primary school, it was bull rush. And I tell you what, not a cell phone in sight. But boy, when that bell rang, it was all about bull rush. Text me 2101. You can email the panel at rnz.co.nz. With me, Nalini Baruch, founder of Lot 8 Olive Oils. Welcome, Nalini.
Hi, Wallace. Lovely to be here.
And Alan Blackman, Professor of Chemistry. Alan, welcome.
Hi, Wallace. Great to be here.
And straight to this, getting kids to school on the bus, taking the bus to university, about to double in price, half price, free fares, gone from tomorrow. Now, for most regions, age-based public transport fares will change May 1st. Hundreds of thousands of Kiwis affected by this move. The move was flagged by the incoming government. Now, scrapping the Labor government era fees, subsidies, which gave children aged 5 to 12 free travel and half price fares for those aged 13 to 14, had been part of National's pre-election campaign commitments. Anyway, the last day is today. We thought we'd discuss it with a New Plymouth-based public transport advocate, Saraya Sidhu Singh. Saraya, welcome to the panel.
Kia ora, Wallace, and kia ora to the panel.
Yes, so fees free was introduced to, you know, counteract those soaring petrol prices back in the day. What do you think is the case for keeping them going?
Well, when we invest in public transport, I mean, this is one of the best investments we can possibly make. It's mostly the biggest user groups are people that are on lower incomes, tamariki, rangatahi, older people. You know, these are the people in society that we really should be investing in. And we know that we want more people to use public transport because it creates these other savings throughout, you know, through the health budget and in terms of people getting more exercise and so on and so forth. I think it's a real no-brainer in terms of this is a great place to put what money we do have.
Inflation is coming down a bit, though, Saraya. Is this really the best investment for a government to keep this going?
Looking at the last report on inflation, it was 4%. Now, that's still about double what the Reserve Bank actually want it to be. You know, this is a case that what we're seeing there is the kind of the rate at which prices are increasing. It's coming down, if that makes any sense. So it's still hurting families quite a lot. You know, and yeah, I've just mentioned before about how, you know, what we're doing here is looking at by keeping these fares rational, where, you know, we're investing in this resource that we already have and using that better. Now, this is something that's actually quite inflation fighting rather than, you know, buying sort of goods that can be in shortage and therefore that's likely to increase. I mean, I can't see any problems with investing in public transport in terms of, you know, keeping prices down.
Okay, so good for the future. And in a minute, I'll go around some of the main centres to see, because they all have variations on the price. But nonetheless, Nalini, what do you think about this half price and free fares gone from tomorrow? Is there any bus service where you are?
Yes. I take the bus from Martinborough to Featherston. And from Featherston, I take the train into Wellington. And then train back to Featherston and bus to Martinborough. So, we have bus and train.
Good service?
When it's not delayed, Wairarapa is known for almost always been late. So, yes, we're not a good example here. But I'm curious to know, do we know how many more children between 5 and 12 and people between 13 and 24 actually actively use the service?
Well, we haven't got the figures here, but Sarai, do you have any idea?
I don't know, broken up by you know, specifically children, but in general we're seeing quite an increase in the use of public transport, particularly in regional areas. It hasn't been so successful in Wellington and Auckland, and that's partly because of the reliability issues that Nalini was just referring to there.
Yeah, all right, Alan.
Okay. look, I mean, it's obviously a no-brainer, really. It's much better for school kids and co to, you know, pay less on public transport than it is, you know, like it's going to be tomorrow when their fares are going to double. But I mean, the bottom line is, and it's always about the bottom line, isn't it, that somebody somewhere has got to pay. And with a limited amount of money, I guess the government have deemed that this is not where they want to make their investment. I can't say that I necessarily agree with that. But I think with public transport, the one thing that we need to do is to make it work in this country. It just doesn't. I mean, you see it here in Auckland. I mean,
works for Nalini.
As a matter of it does work for me. But the thing is, Wallace, we are a region that is growing, and we could do with a lot more trains at the moment. Okay. And so we've always got our cap out saying, well, if it's not working successfully elsewhere, could we please have it?
Well, there's a brilliant video I just watched, like, yesterday, I think, somewhere. It was after a Taylor Swift concert in Sydney, and it was a speeded-up video of 50,000 people being moved by their train service, which was right next door to the concert venue. And, you know, that's the way to do it. They obviously can get it to work. Europe gets it to work. America, probably not so much, I don't think, in terms of public transport. Everyone's too wedded to their car. But I think we're a little bit like that here in New Zealand, and we really need to relook at this. I mean, for the future of the country, for the future of the planet, can we not just all agree that in the biggest city in the country, and, you know, in the biggest cities in the country...
Just make an effort. Look at the timetable. It's not that hard.
I feel I'm being berated
it's
here, Wallace.
It's not that hard, right? So, I mean, you guys are so late. Soraya, is it really that hard to walk 5 minutes in the rain and umbrella to your local bus stop? Are people a bunch of whingers here?
Walk to school? Well,
Soraya?
In New Plymouth, you can walk 5 minutes to your bus stop, and then you'll be waiting for an hour for a bus. So, it's not as easy everywhere, and definitely the ease of using the bus is a really big factor. I mean, it's easy to say, especially if you've used it for a while, it's easy, but actually the first time people report finding it very difficult to find the information they need to. There's a lot of hoops when you look into it, you know, in terms of having to get these cards. Some parts of the country, they don't accept cash anymore at all.
Well, that's true.
You know, there's... Yeah. And I would love to see regional authorities actually really pay attention to removing the barriers for people and making it as simple as possible.
Okay, so the idea of removing barriers, making it seamless, yeah, which is actually one thing they do overseas, don't they? You go to, say, for example, Tokyo, gosh, it's just there's no barriers, right?
Yeah.
Wallace, no one's mentioning the importance of the positive impact of increased public transport on mitigation. Climate change, that is important. So you wanted to come in, Nalini.
Well, there's a bit of that there. Oh, I was just going to say, I'm very keen to know, and I'm not sure if Soraya has the answer to this, because children get to travel free, do school students take up commuter traveller seats on trains and buses?
Well, yeah, if there's a seat, you sit down on it. Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah.
Yeah, you sit down on a seat.
So because it's free, students are taking buses later in the day because they can.
No, you can. What happens?
Mum and dad's finishing work at 5 o'clock, trying to get home to cook dinner.
I don't understand what you're saying. I don't understand what you're saying. You're saying that can students sit down on a bus? No, anyway, so final points, Raya. So what happens in New Plymouth? some fund, because some councils will continue to fund for select groups?
So we've got, luckily we've got our local polytechnic has been always allowing the students there to travel for free. The regional council basically invoices them at the end of the month for those for that student travel. However, 13 to 25 year olds will be full price now, unless they've got a community services card, and 5 to 12 will be, who were previously free, will also be full price. And I think that, you know, this difference in fare policy that's going on all around the country is part of the problem here, you know. I mean, we should be doing it right, and we should be doing it simply, you know. But and how do we justify these really big differences in exactly who pays and how much around the country? You know, it's like a postcode lottery, I think.
Yeah, good point.
Actually, that is a point worth exploring, Soraya. Imagine if you were able to, you know, go to Wellington, go to Featherston, whatever, and you knew exactly what you'd pay in what bracket.
And that could be something that we could have with the introduction of the nationwide ticketing system that is planned for to happen later this year. You know, it would be a good time to sort of actually look at actually, you know, could we have predictable fares around the country as well?
Very interesting, Soraya. Thank you. Thank you very much for that. That's Soraya Sidhu Singh, a New Plymouth-based public transport advocate.
Well, it's, it's still travel in the weekend for 5 to 12-year-olds is still going to be available for free, isn't
that's
it?
That's it. That's exactly right. Yep, definitely.
Yeah, okay.
That's right. So from a couple of facts on that. So from tomorrow, young people 13 to 15 and students 16 to 19 will see their fares double. But in Auckland, they travel free on weekends with their cards. So just around the Motu here, Auckland weekday zone one travel will rise from 70 cents to $1.35 for ages 13 to 15 tomorrow. Hamilton concessions are extended until June the 30th. In Wellington, those aged 13 to 16 see their fares double. They now have to pay 92 cents for zone one, up from 46. Free travel for those aged 5 to 12 is ending, and travellers will now have to pay the same fares as those aged 13 to 16. And in Christchurch, those aged 5 to 12 will no longer be eligible for free travel. It's $1 per trip on metro buses. And finally, Otago, children aged 5 to 12 will continue to travel free. And those aged 13 to 18 will pay $1.20. for a one-way trip, up from 60 cents. Just go to your local transport app and look at the latest details there. Harry says, as a regular bus user on Mount Eden round, the service is actually great. It is regular. It's reliable. Another one, how mean-spirited. Kids shouldn't have half-price fares because they might take adult seats.
That's what I meant.
I totally support half-price fares. It makes a huge difference to low-income families. Francis says, in Japan, if a bus, where is it? Where is that? Because that was a good one. If a bus is 1 minute late, they apologise. Why do we have to be so third world for public transport? Yeah, a lot of response on this. Keep them coming. 22 past 6, the panel. Now, the One News Variant poll on Monday night, last night, the issue has reverberated through the day, brought up in Question Time today as well, has been described as a shock poll for the coalition by TVNZ's political editor. But is it way too early in the term for the coalition to be bothered by this? National down 2 points to 36, ACT down 1 point to 7, New Zealand First out of parliament altogether, falling under the 5% threshold on 4.2 on this poll here. That gives National and ACT 57 seats between them, not enough to hold the government benches. Labour up 2 points to 30. And Te Pāti Māori steady on 4 there. Meanwhile, a pay rise for MPs, that came through this afternoon, didn't it? So an ordinary MP salary is up, backdated 2.8%, up from 163,000 to 168 grand. Chris Luxon, Prime Minister, gets an extra $50,000. With us is Jackie Vanderkey, a political commentator, former journalist, holds a master's degree in political science from Victoria. Jackie, kia ora.
Kia ora. Thank you.
Yeah, pleasure to have you on, Jackie. Let's take a look at these. This poll here. Look, it's just one poll, isn't it? A snapshot in time, as Chris Hipkins said. But anything of note for you here?
So I think the biggest thing is that with this particular poll is New Zealand First coming below the 5% threshold. I think the other figures, National will be worried, despite the fact they are deflecting today, because they are trending. This is one of a number of polls which has seen their support dropping.
So on that, Jackie, is it usual for the honeymoon period to be over about this time, you know, just after the 5-month mark?
No, I would say this is early. This is unusual, I would say. Normally, governments do have a honeymoon period that would last longer than 5 months. And primarily it's because people are positive about the fact there's been a change in government. So there's generally tends to be a bit of a lift, and particularly for prime ministers. And that would be something I would imagine that Chris Luxon will be worried about, in that his polling is also dropping in multiple polls.
Okay, yeah, his preferred prime ministership down to 23%. All right, Nalini, yeah. Your comments, your questions on this?
Well, I think Jack has summed it up very well. It might just be a little too early to be looking at polls. 2-3 polls from now, maybe the coalition will need to sit up and take note if it's still in a downward drive. I'm still so fatigued by election that I've really switched off. I'm not looking at these numbers. I'm looking at what's going to be in about 6 months' time, what the numbers are going to be in about 6 months' time, in 12 months' time.
You're looking at life.
They're only 150 days in. Only 150 days in, yeah.
Okay, so nothing to see here, says
Nalini. Nothing to see here. Yeah.
Jackie, stay there. Alan?
Well, why are we so obsessed with polls? I mean,
and that too.
The only poll that matters is going to happen in 2026.
Oh, that was made, yeah.
And we have these coming out every, I don't know, what, 3 months or so, there or thereabouts, and they're up, they're down, they're all over the show. Jackie, do you know what the margin of error on these values are? It's normally about three percent or so, isn't it?
They are. Okay. They are normally about 3%.
Right.
So you can.
So really nothing's happened. Really, we're still within the margin of error. Somebody's down 2, somebody's up 2, or whatever. It's within the margin of error.
That's what Ed McKnight said yesterday, Jackie.
So I totally hear what you're saying, Alan, but I think what we do need to look at is what the trends are saying. So as well as the polls that have been taking place during the first part of this year, there's also been the Ipsos poll, which looks at the issues that New Zealanders are concerned about, or looks at issues in New Zealand. And that one came out in late February, and that showed that New Zealanders rated the government's performance at 4.6 out of 10, which is similar to the score that the last government had right before the election in October. So it's pretty low, and it does show. So it does reflect the feeling that
that nobody's happy.
Pretty much.
Well, actually, on that, Jackie, there was a bit of commentary actually about the style of analysis by TVNZ's political editor Mikey Sherman, saying it was quite how do you describe it?
Sensationalist.
But having said that, I will quote, because she said, that the current narrative is a constant buzzkill, quote unquote. You know, so because much of the government's work around cuts and repeals, there's been a ton of policy change, which creates a negative framing. So, in a sense, I think what Mikey, if I can sum it up, there's really nothing for the voter to look forward to.
Yeah, and I think there is an element of truth of that. So while the government has been championing that they've been taking a lot of action, a lot of the action has been repealing what the previous government did, and there's been discussion about the treaty, there's been discussion about gang pictures, a lot of discussion about public service cuts, blaming the previous government, there's been changes to the smoking legislation, there's a fast-track bill. So there's a lot of issues which you could say, are negative, and there's not a lot yet, and I guess this is what the government would be hoping with the budget coming up at the end of May, talking about what they are going to do. So, you know, what is the government going to do to fix these issues that New Zealanders are concerned about, like the cost of living, for example?
Just briefly before you go, one thing I've noted, I took note of Te Pāti Māori on, at 4% on, one might say, a bit of a ROM. And I can recall, you know, when they first started, this was off the back of the first incarnation of the Māori Party, and really, in a sense, struggling for survival, struggling for survival at, you know, 1%, doing quite well.
Yeah, I think they are. And I do wonder whether that is partly a reflection to do with the fact that there has been quite a lot of discussion, particularly when the government first came into power, around issues around treaty-type issues. And I do wonder whether that is a space where they hold the ground, if you want, you know, for want of a better word. Mm. And also they're very strong on social issues as well. And when people are concerned about the cost of living, that could also be one of the reasons.
Always good to have you on, Jackie. Kia ora. Thank you for your time tonight. That's Jackie Van Der Kemp, political commentator, former journalist there. Your thoughts on that? One thing I do want to bring up before the news, though, the other news that came out, a pay rise for MPs. So an ordinary MP salary at $168,600, up from $163,961. That's backdated, a 2.8% pay rise. They'll get a further 2.4% increase in July of this, no, 2.9, extra 2.9 this year, an extra 2.4 next year, and a 2% increase in July 2026, the first increase in 6 years. Yes or no to MPs getting a pay increase? Nalini.
Yes. If you want to attract good caliber, you need to pay for it.
Okay, so
I think Chris Finlayson said it very well. I think when Chris Finlayson was asked this question, he said something along the lines of, well, if you don't, then the rich will run government and you don't really want that either.
Okay, all right. So Nalini says all support.
I mean, the thing is, Wallace, we need the Remuneration Authority have very qualified people who take advice on these things. Mm. It's decided with good advice. It's not something that they woke up one day and said, oh, let's give them a 2.8% increase because we feel like it.
Well, that's
so right. So we need to respect that. We need to respect how it is that they got to that decision. And as you, I think, said in the intro, Parliament has the right. It can pass legislation to refuse it if it wants. But I think the fact that they haven't had an increase in 6 years
gives them
the right to have this. They've earned it.
Okay, so they have earned it. They're absolutely for it. What about you, Alan?
Oh, I think what Nalini says makes sense about the Remuneration Authority, an independent authority that is looking at this. And if this is what they think is deserved, then who are we to say that it's not? But I would just like to see everybody else in the country getting at least 2.9%. But then that's inflationary, isn't it? So I don't know.
The thing is, Alan, compare what these members of parliament are getting versus what the CEOs are getting.
Well, that's the one thing. Why is anybody in this country getting paid more than the Prime Minister? That to me makes absolutely no sense, but I'm just a mere academic. So,
very good. Yeah. All right.
Some qualified person will answer that question.
Do you support that MP pay rises? Yes or no? Is it, as Nalini said, it is about time because we want to attract the best that the country has to offer.
We do.
or, Alan, you've got to be kidding, move on. You're on the panel, NZ National. We have Alan Blackman and Nalini Baruch.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.